Rodgers takes the snap, third and 10, drops, pressure coming, gets the pass. It's intercepted, picked off down the sideline, 20, 15, 10, 5, touchdown Tampa Bay.
Swing and a drive, deep right field. On its way, Bellinger watches it go out of here.
You know, I started talking with Kyle and Sheldon, and, you know, it was the hardest hockey decision I've ever had to make. You know, with the roster they have, with the guys they picked up this offseason, I think this team is, you know, ready to win now. I'm ready to win, and I'm just excited I'm coming to be our Maple Leaf.
All right, there's really no time to waste this morning, but I do want to waste a minute or two. I want to give you the floor. I do this each and every Monday, Ziggy.
Mm-hmm.
I want to give you the floor to talk about my 49ers because you like to pick on them when they stink, when they struggle. Now I'd like some love.
They look good. What can I say? Huh? Are you not happy now? You happy your team finally decided to come out and play decent against a team that's been good but can't win? Hey, go right ahead.
Well, all I'd like is some sort of acknowledgement that at some point this year, 18 different guys have been on injured reserve or have been unable to play, and they stepped up last night and they got it done. Got it done.
No, I mean, the Rams have had a good season. They have a good team, no? Like, that's a game I don't expect the 49ers to win. You expect them to beat the Rams?
I do if they're healthy at home, but I don't in this situation. You're absolutely right. And I think now if you're the LA Rams and you're the 49ers and you're looking at it, you're going, damn, the Seattle Seahawks. If it wasn't obvious before, the Seahawks are clear-cut best in the division, although Seattle's got issues on its defense and continually counts on Russell Wilson to pull it out of the fire each and every week. The thing is Russell Wilson actually pulls them out of the fire each and every week. And until that stops, they're going to win football games. So it's fascinating stuff. And we're 6 weeks into the season now. So some teams have played five with byes or they've had COVID related schedule complications. Most teams have played six games. Like, we are careening here toward the halfway mark of the season. So you've got a pretty good sense of what a lot of these teams are. We have a really good sense of what home field means. And in a season where most stadiums are crowdless and others only have maybe a quarter capacity at most, Buffalo plays tonight. And
yeah, two Monday nighters, huh?
Dude, this is going to be...
That's exciting.
Going to be like living on the Pacific Coast.
I like the two games on Monday. I think it's great.
Well,
I don't know.
Well, no, this is going to be like living on the Pacific Coast. Because the Monday nighter for us, KC at Buffalo, I know Arizona, Dallas plays later. We got a 5 o'clock game.
Mm-hmm.
That's what the Sunday nighter and Monday nighter gets underway on the West Coast. Like, you don't have to stay up till midnight to see the end of the football game. And I called it last week. I think Buffalo's going to win this game. I think Kansas City's going to be on a mini two-game losing skid when all this is said and done tonight.
Yeah, I don't know about that one, bud. Come on. You think I think the Bills right now, I don't know. I love the start to the season, but I just don't know. They haven't convinced me that they're contenders yet. I don't know what, and I don't know what I need to see. Like, what else do I need to see? Just Josh Allen playing a little bit more consistent. I don't know. He's been great so far, but he's had some lapses in these games. I don't know what else I have to see out of this team, but it's just not there yet for me.
Well, it would be very Buffalo to make it difficult on themselves. The Patriots losing yesterday, and New England had a crazy, week or 2 weeks?
Yeah, this Patriots team, can you really get upset at what they've gone through? They haven't practiced. They should have beat the Chiefs. They didn't have their replacement quarterback, which I'm calling Cam Newton. He's still the replacement to me.
Well,
I don't know.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean, though?
He is their starter.
He's their starter, but do you know what I mean? Like, he's the guy replacing Tom Brady. And if he would have been in, they would have beat the Chiefs. But go ahead.
Right. Well, Brian Hoyer is, I mean, Brian Hoyer had a good 4 or 5 weeks for the Cleveland Browns in 2014. And that was effectively it in terms of his effectiveness in the NFL. Yeah, I think when you look at New England's situation, they had at least a half a dozen guys, more than any other team in the league, opt out before the season started because of COVID-19. Dont'a Hightower, their very important middle linebacker, Patrick Chung, their veteran safety, said, see ya. Then you got the Brady turnover. Then you've got the COVID situation with his replacement, Cam Newton, and there have been a couple of positive tests since then, and the facility has generally been shut down. Like, that's a Denver team with a rookie quarterback coming into Boston or Foxborough in mid-October. This is the time of year, typically in the Belichick era, and of course it was always the Brady-Belichick era, where the Patriots have started to figure it out. They'll drop a loss or two in September, but then by mid-October, when we've all been calling this season the one where it's finally all going to fall apart for them, usually by mid-October, they've shut us all up and they've started to go on a winning streak and they're going to trek toward the division title. It would be very Buffalo to complicate this, and obviously there would be no shame in losing to Kansas City, the defending Super Bowl champs. The Chiefs haven't looked great at times this year. They got 40 hung on them by Vegas at home last week. They barely beat the Chargers in Los Angeles back in week two, but it would be very Buffalo to make this more difficult. You've got a 3-loss Patriots team. You've got a 3-loss, I think, Dolphins team right now, and you've got the New York Jets, who are not in any way consequential in any of this. This division becomes Buffalo's with a win tonight.
This is it's theirs for the taking. I don't know. I think this is going to be, well, it's going to be a test today, but it's going to be a little bit of a wake-up call, I think. I think they're going to struggle against the Chiefs. I think Mahomes, last 2 weeks, so you lose to the Raiders, and you should have lost to the Patriots. Cam Newton was in, they lose. I think a team like the Chiefs sometimes, you play against these inferior teams, and I'm not saying the Raiders are not a good team, but you play these games where you expect to win, and sometimes you don't have it. Either your focus or concentration isn't there. Mahomes hasn't been sharp. The Chiefs haven't been sharp. And that's their wake-up call the last 2 weeks. For the Bills, hey, if they can somehow, even if they're competitive in this game, I'd be happy. If this was even a close game, they don't even have to win it for me. I want them to be in this one today because I don't have a lot of confidence in them against the Chiefs.
Well, here's the thing. It's kind of all black and white then, and if you take that tact, because if they get their asses kicked, we're going to be asking a bunch of questions. But if they hang tight, okay. No, they lost to the best team in football last year.
Yeah.
That's okay. And there's no doubt that Kansas City will be a motivated bunch because elite teams plug holes, stop leaks immediately. And again, they got hung with 40 points by the Vegas Raiders last week. You know, I'm thinking about, you know me, it always comes back to the 49ers. Where do the 49ers go next week? They go to Foxborough. They play the Patriots. You don't think the Patriots and Bill Belichick are going to be keyed in and locked in after losing at home to Denver? This ain't Peyton Manning's Denver Broncos. This is a rebuilding team. You know?
The thing about, just the thing about the Patriots and Belichick, though, if there's any team that can't practice and is going to be bad, they're the first team that pops into my mind. I can't imagine what his preparation and what he does in a practice compared to other teams. I feel like it's so far above and beyond anybody else that it's to the point where it annoys the players. Imagine, and that's when you're practicing too much.
Imagine sitting in your living room for 14 hours a day last week on Zoom calls with
trying to get ready for a game
with Bill Belichick and with your specific coach of your positional group.
My Zoom's broken. That's what I say.
Yeah.
It's broken.
Yeah. I mean, imagine.
What do you think, when he calls you, like, what's your first, like, you can't be late And it's easy to be late sometimes on either you're on another call or you're in the kitchen or you're in the bathroom. Like, it's easy to be late on a Zoom call.
Oh, yeah.
But imagine you were, so that's the first thing. I wonder what does he start it off? Do you think Belichick says, do you think he exchanges pleasantries? Like, hey, how are you doing? How's your day going?
I think he takes attendance. And I think it's like 80s elementary school that you and I were in. I bet you they stand there. He stands there with a clipboard with everybody's name, and he just checks off names.
So when they do the Zoom meetings, you don't think they break it down into smaller groups and run through everything? You think they do the whole?
No. They definitely. I mean, and I don't know how they do this. They must be doing Zoom or Microsoft Teams or some kind of deal. But yeah, you would be with your coordinator, if you will, but the coaching trees in the NFL, it's sheer lunacy. You got the head coach,
there's more coaches than players.
Then you got the offensive coordinator and the defensive coordinator. Then you got the linebackers coach, and under him is the outside linebackers coordinator or coach, and the inside linebackers coordinator. You got the offensive line coach, you got the defensive line coach. It's
what happened to the three? The head, the defense, and the offense.
There's so much to oversee. And so much, it's such a science.
I think you can overcoach a team. I think no coaching is better than bad coaching or overcoaching. Is that strange to say?
Does it depend on the sport, though? I mean,
no, every sport, everyone.
Because I'm telling you right now, out of the Big Four, the so-called Big Four, coaching in football means the most out of any of the sports in the Big Four. Baseball, and I'm talking specifically the manager here, who's pretty much, okay, don't misuse your bullpen, don't overwork guys, whatever. I would say that baseball coaching at that level is least important. I mean, you can do infield practice and you do daily batting practice and all that stuff. You might be teaching or reteaching or reminding younger kids of some fundamentals. I mean, Allen Iverson didn't think much of practice. And then somewhere in the middle, you've got basketball and hockey, and you can rank where you think.
Yeah, I don't know. That's just my one thing. It's like, no, just from my experience, and now my experience coaching is that I'd rather say nothing than try to say something to be relevant in a situation and like I'm doing something. I'd rather do nothing. And that's hard to do as a coach. But yeah, imagine the Belichick Zoom meetings must be just awesome. Like, I can't imagine.
Hold on a second. How did you get the job at U of T? You go in.
I knocked on the front door. Isn't that how you do it?
They interview you and they say, all right, coach, assistant coach Zygomanis, what are you going to bring to the table? And you go, I am not going to say anything. Nothing.
Yeah, I'm not doing anything.
Nothing. Well, maybe you're going to do something.
Yeah, the Jerry Seinfeld.
You got a centerman who's goalless in eight games. What are you going to say to him? Nothing.
Nothing.
I'm going to talk to him.
Well, you got to say something.
You got to say something.
No, you don't, actually. No, you don't. Speaking about Seinfeld, did you see that clip from Bellinger? He has no idea who Jerry Seinfeld is.
We're at that point in our world now. We're at that point.
But when was that? So that was an interview on ESPN, right?
Yeah.
But when was that? I don't know when it was from.
I don't know. But Cody Bellinger's only 24 years old, Ziggy. He was born or 25 now. July baby. I checked that. He's July of 95. Seinfeld, the TV show, went off the air when he was three.
Yeah. But the whole clip was Jerry Seinfeld was at the game and somebody had asked them, right? Do you know who Jerry Seinfeld is? And he's like, I've heard the name, but I wouldn't know who it is or what he does.
Oh, my God.
Yeah, that's like crazy. That's hilarious.
And Seinfeld's still doing his stand-up and stuff. Like, he's still out.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah, he's still out there. I mean, one of the greatest shows of all time, like, ratings-wise?
He dropped a Netflix special, back in the spring. I remember the moment I got wind of that, dropped. I watched it.
Anyways, I thought that was hilarious. Speaking about Jerry Seinfeld, I mean, he didn't even. I understand if you're not a fan or you're like, oh, I'm not really into it, but you have an idea of what Jerry Seinfeld does, but to not even know. But yeah, the story behind it was he was at a game or something, and they're like, oh, Jerry Seinfeld's there, and Bellinger's like, no, okay, great.
Well, because Seinfeld showed up in the MJ doc, right? That was back in the '90s. Like he just. Yeah. And Phil Jackson at one point was like, all right, Jerry. And then Jerry just has this constant look of bewilderment on his face.
Yeah.
Okay, I guess I got to go.
Yeah.
Joe Thornton. So shouts to people my age, Ziggy.
Mm-hmm. I felt sore getting out of bed this morning again. I don't even know. I didn't even do any. The thing about getting sore and out of bed and at the age of 40 almost is that I don't even know.
I like
what
how
I
you
did.
put the almost in there.
I'm a man. Well, I'm 40.
Thank you, Mike Gundy. And now you're 52 with a mullet. Now you're 52 with a mullet, Mike Gundy.
Yeah, and I mean I don't get the days I'm sore coming out of bed. I didn't do anything the day before. Like, was this from the batting cages? Maybe I'm sore today.
Like that's possible.
It's delayed 3-4 days.
Yeah.
Like I sent the picture to the group chat. You see how black my hand
got? Yeah, and my hand is much better today, but on Saturday it was bruised from the base of the knuckle, the base of the knuckle on my right index finger all the way around to the base of my knuckle on my thumb, and then that little patch in between. Like it was dark, it was tender, it was sore.
They're sore. Oh, yes. So when's the video of that coming out?
Well,
we're
doing a week's worth of this, right?
Today sometime, though, right?
So I think, and I don't know exactly what's been cut and how they're going to, but I do think that today we're gonna take the social media viewer through Kevin Barker working with you in the tea room and then
everything. We're showing it all.
Taking some swings off the tees. Barker had no faith in you at that point. When you were swinging
the tee
off
ball.
The tee.
When the balls were in the tee ball, off the tee, whatever you want to call that thing, the tee ball holder. Yeah, that was not. But it's hard to hit. It's hard to hit a ball
that's just standing there. I mean, God knows you're a scratch golfer. It's hard to just hit a ball that's sitting there.
I think it was easier to hit a 90 than it was the one on the tee. Because the one on the tee, it's like it's just sitting there. Like, okay, you should smash it, and then you go right under it.
Oh yeah, and you hit the tee.
Yeah,
you knock the tee, and then the ball goes.
It's bad. Yeah. And that was not good. So Barker didn't have any faith in me on the tee. And then, yeah, once you started throwing 90 at me, pretty easy from there. And we said what I got up to, did we not, on Friday?
101.
Yeah, 101 I got
to. You hit a 101 mile an hour
I'm
fastball.
Still expecting you guys to say, okay, this is a big joke, and saying, okay, that's kilometers.
We're going to Chris Falcone you. We're going to April Fool's you.
Falconed.
Oh, my God. No, we're not going to Chris Falcone. As I said on Friday morning, I would do, if I could in any way call a foul on your success at the batting cage on Thursday, I would. I can't even make up a lie that will make any sense. Silk Gentilly, we need a piss test.
We need a piss test. Even how bad my hand hurt, you still want to test on. Like, I feel like if I was doing that kind of stuff, my hands wouldn't be sore, and I wouldn't be sore 4 days after.
Silk Gentilly says the first video is likely to come out, and we'll heavily promote it on our Instagram and Twitter.
Yeah.
Likely to come out at some point between now and 9 when the show ends.
Oh, wow.
So
nice.
We'll, if that happens, we'll certainly make mention of it here on the program. And yes, I think whether it's steroids or opiates or whatever, we need a piss test, Siggy. That's what I'm calling for.
I don't want them to show the part where it hits me at the bat not in the right spot and my hands are sore. You think they'll maybe edit that part out?
I think whatever.
You know the part where I was like pretty much crying because the bat, my hands were so sore?
Screaming and wailing like a baby?
Yeah. Hopefully they cut that part out.
Well, we'll see. I'm sure you, whatever grievance you can find with the video,
I'm happy they gave us a look at it before they released it, which is Never didn't happen.
No. We're not getting any kind of editorial say. Say Joe Thornton is a Maple Leaf.
Yes.
There were some teams that were interested, and Doug wanted me to come back to San Jose. And then, you know, I started talking with Kyle and Sheldon, and, you know, it was the hardest hockey decision I've ever had to make. But I truly believe Toronto's, you know, with the roster they have, with the guys they picked up this offseason, I think this team is, you know, ready to win now. I'm ready to win, and I'm just excited. I'm coming to be a Maple Leaf.
Well, shout-outs to 1979 babies. I expect Silent Vic to give us a little Smashing Pumpkins 1979 before the show is over today. Best year.
Oh, yeah, a little bumper music.
41 years old. So the role here, Ziggy, is he a second-line power play guy who takes some offensive zone face-offs at even strength? I look at this more as an acquisition of leadership on a few different levels. Number one, externally, Joe Thornton can handle the media, and he will probably say some things that get people laughing and that you and I and others will latch on to that may distract us for a segment or two from what could actually be going on the ice. That's not something John Tavares or a lot of the younger guys that the Leafs have do. Then in the room, more importantly, I think Joe Thornton's a guy who can joke, who can laugh, who can keep things light, but then who has the cachet to say to some of these guys, and he has a way about saying it that will keep some of these guys in line. I think John Tavares is a leader by example, but I don't envision, like, you know how I always say I can't see a way that Brett Laurie has ever slept an hour in his life. Like, I think I've just always felt that Brett Laurie is awake 24/7 all the time.
Crushing Red Bulls. Yeah.
I don't see John Tavares getting in somebody's face, in somebody's grill. And doesn't mean he doesn't. I just don't see that coming off as being pure, authentic John Tavares. And I think that that's something Joe Thornton will bring to this team.
A healthy roster right now, Thornton starts on the fourth line. I think they're going to give Kerfoot the shot they're going to give him the job, and it's going to be his to lose. If they don't like what they see,
third line center.
Yeah. I think Thornton or Spezza will go in. It's going to give you a couple different options. So that's what's going to happen with the third line center, Joe Thornton. How does he fit in? Power play wise, special teams, second unit power play. Does he play on the first? That first struggles or hiccups at all, he goes in on the first unit. But that just gives them another weapon on the power play, right? Now you can use Spezza or Thornton. I don't see it. You know, I'm hearing a lot of, well, oh, Jason Spezza signed. What's he thinking now that all of a sudden Thornton comes? It's bringing in a guy doing the same thing you're doing. Guy at the end of his career, experienced vet. You know, can show some leadership in the room. I don't think it's such a bad thing for Jason Spezza to have Joe Thornton come in. I actually think it helps him in a way where you have another guy coming in. It's almost going to be like they have that spot. Remember last year, kind of, I feel like Jason Spezza would get lost in the shuffle sometimes. I feel like they have that veteran presence now. You have both guys there, and I think it helps Spezza in some strange way. But with Thornton in the room now, this is one of those things where, yeah, I'm with you on who do they have that's going to be that guy. And I talked to some of Thornton's former teammates, and they say best guy in the room, always livens it up, knows what to say, says the right thing at the right time. So he's going to be that vocal leader. And there's different types of leadership. You have some captains, some leaders don't say anything, and you get some guys that are always joking around, keeping things light, but keeping guys accountable. And that's what you said earlier. Thornton is not going to be afraid to tell somebody like, hey, Mitch, I need more plays in tough areas from you. Hey, Nylander, you can't vanish for 20 minutes in a game. Like, he'll say that to guys, no doubt. And he said he could handle the media. And I think he can, but 82 games is a long time. Oh, so we'll see.
Might not be 82, Ziggy.
Whatever, 60 or 70, whatever. Whatever 60. It is. But this is a tough place to play. I don't care what anyone says. It's a big stage. I think he can handle it, but it's going to be a little tougher on him than he thinks.
Well, and I just come back to my original point that I had before the Thornton signing, and I believe it as much, if not more now. This is it for the Big Four. Doesn't mean all four are getting pushed out the door next summer, but if this team doesn't take that next step, there will be more significant changes, and I think it will involve at least one of the Big Four in the next offseason, whenever that is, if this mm-hmm. team doesn't take the next step. We'll get into that and more of that with Stephen Brunt and Gord Stellick in the 7 o'clock hour. Ross Tucker for his weekly Monday morning hit at 8 o'clock, taking you around week 6 of the NFL. And John Paul Morosi, we've got a Los Angeles Dodgers and Tampa Bay Rays World Series after the Dodgers stormed back from a 3-1 series deficit and polished off Atlanta last night. Cody Bellinger playing the hero. Los Angeles has two players, Clayton Kershaw and Mookie Betts, who either by themselves make more or about as much as the entire Tampa Bay Rays payroll. Little disparity there. And we'll tee up the World Series with John Paul Morosi. We want to give away Untuckit gift cards. I've forgotten the amount, $700 up for grabs today. We had a losing week last week, So be listening for your cue to call to be our contestant. It's $700 today. Hugh has just walked in. He came to work, even though his Washington football team lost to the New York, allegedly, allegedly football Giants yesterday. Oh, yeah, well, and you knew that was going to be a gross game. Hughes in studio. We'll burl the lead next. $700 in Untuckit gift cards to give away. You're Untucked today, aren't you? That's definitely an Untuckit shirt.
This is definitely from the Hugh Burrell Untuckit collection.
Yes.
Well, it's getting cold out, man. Time to throw the flannels on.
I know. You should. There should be a Hugh Burrell section. Hugh B. Like a H-U-G-H-B.
B. I like
Hugh
that.
B section in the Untuckit stores.
Are you listening, Untuckit?
Now, by the way, I get 20%.
Yes, absolutely. Of course.
I don't drive that hard a bargain.
Standard.
If I'd said 50, would you let me know?
We can talk.
All right. Well, there are $700 in Untuckit gift cards to give away, and I would imagine a Hugh B shirt would cost about that.
Dozens of dollars. Yeah.
So be listening for your cue to call. We've talked a little Joe Thornton. We've talked a little NFL. We'll probably come back to those and burl the lead.
Yes, we will. But right now, let's talk some baseball. The Fall Classic is set. The Rays will face the Dodgers after L.A. comes all the way back against the Braves.
Eighth pitch has been the magic one tonight. This time he hits the ball to deep right field. Corey Bellinger has done it! And the Dodgers win it in Game 7.
4-3 Dodgers, the final. L.A. was down 3-1 at one point in this series. They booked their third trip to the Fall Classic in 4 years. Corey Seager's NLCS record, 5 home runs, good enough to secure the MVP for the series. So now it's the Dodgers and their $107 million payroll against the Rays and their $28 million worth of talent. To put that in perspective, Dodgers outfielder Mookie Betts has a base salary this season of $27 million. Game one of the World Series goes tomorrow night. Who you got?
Well, Clayton Kershaw makes, what, 31 or something. He makes more than the Rays.
It's incredible.
This, I'm just thinking, like, the Dodgers at some point have to win one of these damn things, right? That they've been in the playoffs every year since, I think, 2013 or 14.
Yeah. They lost back-to-back.
Yeah, Houston and Boston in 17 and 18. I am going... You know, I always trust, and as much as I hate to admit this, because I don't want Ziggy getting this into his head when we get back into hockey season, I always have this deep trust of what former players say, and J.P.R. and Sebia was on our show very early in the playoffs when the Jays were playing the Rays, said Tampa Bay is going to win the World Series. I think we're going to go 6 or 7. And I am rooting for the Dodgers because I don't like salary-suppressing franchises, but I think Tampa Bay is going to win.
Ziggy, who you got?
I got the Dodgers, guys. They're actually going to do it. They're really going to do
right.
it this
I
year.
I hope you're right.
Yeah, I think this is their time. Yeah, I mean, who wants one of the lowest salary teams in the league to win? You want teams that go for it, right? You want teams that try to sign guys, big names, big players. That's what you want, right? So yeah, I don't like the fact that, you know, the Rays are trying to change the way things are done. I mean, how many teams right now are saying, organizations are saying, look at them do it.
Oh, they've
Why
been
can't
doing
we
it.
Do it on a limited payroll?
Yeah. What I would like is for Clayton Kershaw to win a World Series and pitch a good game in the series to kind of nullify the playoff narrative.
Yeah, I can't believe that people are all over him. I'd love to have him on my team. Let's talk some football. NFL Sunday, the feature matchup of the day was Aaron Rodgers' 4-0 Packers visiting Tom Brady's 3-2 Bucks. Rodgers looked very sharp early, leading the pack to a 10-0 first quarter lead. And then this happened.
Rodgers takes the snap, 3rd and 10, drops, pressure coming against the pass. It's intercepted, picked off down the sideline, 20, 15, 10, 5, touchdown Tampa Bay! Buccaneers, Jamal Dean! First turnover of the season by the pack, and it's a pick six.
Now, Rodgers would throw another interception just 2 passes later, 38-10. Tampa Bay the final, and after the game, Aaron Rodgers was saying, maybe needs a stiff drink.
Yeah, I mean, I feel good about the team, Bill. Might need to add an extra finger to the scotch, but I do feel good about the team. You know, I've played for so long, you know, you're going to have a couple stinkers.
Yeah, I mean, if you're a Packers fan, don't worry too much about this one. They weren't going to go 16-0.
You know the stiff drink reference, right? To when they took Jordan Love.
Jordan Love, He poured himself 4 fingers and had a nice long think about that. I mean, Brady was pretty good yesterday. Wasn't great, but pretty good. He was good enough. And Rodgers just was off yesterday.
When Tampa Bay didn't take a penalty in the entire game, I don't think. And we're all guilty of it. And I think we're more guilty of it in football because we have to sit on every result for a full week.
Yeah.
And there are only 16 games, so they each mean so much. Green Bay's a good team. They had holes last year. Yeah. They didn't necessarily address some of those around Rodgers offensively. So it'll be fascinating to see how they bounce back. But isn't it funny? Tampa Bay lost in New Orleans in week one. And, well, you know, Tom Brady. And
It's the overreaction league.
Tampa Bay is 4-2 now and leading that division.
Starting to click a little bit,
I don't know. I think it's their defense more than Tom. Like, I think Green Bay completely controls the start of that game. Like, Tampa Bay doesn't have anything going, and then it's the defense with the interception. They run it back. Like, it was the defense for me in that one. It's been the defense in a couple of the games when Tom's been just average and the offense doesn't really have it going. The no penalties is an interesting one. I'm wondering how much of that Tom brings with him from New England. I just feel like that's a staple of Belichick's Patriots. You know what
discipline.
I mean? Like the discipline, the no penalties, right?
I also think refs are probably afraid to throw flags against a Tom Brady led football team, but that's the conspiracy theorist in me.
And how about Gronkowski?
Yeah. Finally catching a touchdown.
Yep.
Yeah, first TD, 679 days. Yep.
And that was a beautiful throw by Brady.
Yep. Is there a more dominating running back in the NFL right now than the Titans' Derrick Henry?
Give it to Henry. Looking for some room. Finds it. 10, 15, 20, 25, 30, 35, 40, 45, 50, 45, 40,
wow!
35, 30, 25, 20, 15, 10, 5, end zone. Ladies and gentlemen, 94 yards. Touchdown, Titans!
What a great call there. Henry would also score the winning touchdown in overtime. Titans beat the Texans 42-36. 212 yards rushing for the big fella. He's averaging 118 a game. Titans are 5-0. One of the three remaining unbeaten teams in the league, Seattle and Pittsburgh, the others. And hey, speaking of the Steelers, hashtag segue. They used Mapletron to clobber Cleveland.
No.
Claypool with a jet sweep left. He hesitates. Pylon. Touchdown. Chase Claypool.
Wow.
Mapletron does it again.
Yeah, we talked about this last week. It's not a great nickname. Vic and I decided it should be A-Train.
Americans love it, though.
Yeah.
Americans love it.
Well, because Americans...
My friends love it in the U.S.
Of course, because they think that
they're like maple.
We ride mooses.
It's Canadian. And I'm like, oh right. My, like, really?
Right. And they think we live in igloos, and they think that moose run down the streets of Toronto, and they think that maple syrup falls from the eaves troughs of our homes.
Like, it is very good. I do like maple syrup.
Yeah, I might go and grab some maple syrup
imagine if maple syrup dripped down the eaves troughs of our homes.
Oh, that'd be great. Like, Vikings are 1-5.
Kirk!
Shocking. After losing 40-23 to the previously winless Falcons, mediocre Kirk Cousins threw three more interceptions to give him a league-leading 10. He said after the game, that cannot continue.
The reality is if the pace, you know, that I'm on in terms of the interceptions, if that were to continue, I won't finish the season. I won't, you know what I mean? So you got to improve, whether it's them telling me, hey, we got to improve, or them pulling me. You got to get better, and that'll be what the rest of this season will be about for me, you know, trying to protect the football as best I can, because when you turn the ball over, you know, it really hurts your chances to win. And
laughing all the way to the bank, that guy.
I think that anytime Kirk Cousins says something, Sportsnet has a duty to have a Rash Madani respond right away.
Yes, that's a good idea.
You see his Twitter post yesterday where he had Trevor Lawrence's Vikings jersey. Please let this happen. That's pretty good. But they're not getting Trevor Lawrence because my terrible Washington football club is getting him. Ugh. Elsewhere yesterday, the Broncos used 6 field goals to beat the Patriots 18-12. Pats are 2-3. Yeah, exactly. But get this. The Patriots are now below 500 in October for the first time since 2002. Wow. Niners over the Rams, 24-16 in the Sunday Nighter. Doubleheader tonight. Chiefs at the Bills. Cards at the Cowboys.
You think we're at a point where Bill Belichick could use a little visit from Frank Costanza, the man's ear front?
Are we getting close there?
Huh? I don't know. Right. Take a look next time.
I will.
Let me know.
All right, some hockey for you. This happened after we had left for the day, but Joe Thornton signed a 1-year deal with the Leafs on Friday, I believe it was, right? Friday he signed that deal? Worth the league minimum $700K. He was on a conference call yesterday. Said he talked to Joe Montana about his very difficult decision.
Probably the hardest hockey decision I've ever had to make. But I truly believe Toronto's, you know, with the roster they have, with the guys they picked up this offseason, I think this team is, you know, ready to win now. I'm ready to win, and I'm just excited. I'm coming to be a Maple Leaf. This team is, you know, a very, very good team, and I'm just I need to win a Stanley Cup, and I think this is, you know, a great team that can do that.
He needs to win a Stanley Cup. Now, when we were talking about this on Friday morning, I said I wasn't a huge fan of signing Joe Thornton just for the simple fact of where are you going to put him? How are you going to use him? You already have Jason Spezza. I haven't changed my mind on that. Ziggy, have you changed your mind? Because I think you agreed with me on Friday, did you not?
Yeah, it's tough to keep bringing in, you know, older guys. Like, who's this ice time going to come away from, right?
Spezza.
The only logical, I don't think it's going to come away from Spezza. I don't think Spezza is going to play any less. If he plays the same way, he's not going to play any less than last year. I think this is more, this is going to be the Kerfoot option. I was expecting them to make a move for another centerman, you know, third line, you know, ceiling, but maybe a fourth line guy. And maybe they're not out there. And this is the next option, right? That's where I think this came out of, where they wanted to bring someone in case Kerfoot didn't work out. Instead, they're bringing Joe in. But this checks a lot of other boxes, right? They are getting that guy in the room. I think the room's great without him. I think they can do it. They have the leadership. But maybe this is a reason why the Leafs, you know, they just don't think they have the leadership. They need somebody more. I mean, I can't speak for their behalf. I don't mind. I think Jumbo Joe's great player.
Yep.
But he's not the same quick guy he was, you know, 15 years ago. I think our Leafs Nation has to realize that this is not the same guy from, you know, 2006. Yeah. But
that's a great point. I mean, we all love Joe Thornton. He's a quote machine. He seems to have a fantastic relationship with the media. We all love the guy. We want him to win a Stanley Cup. Yeah, but he's not the same guy that he used to be. But, none of us are, really. When you
well,
think about
speak
that.
For yourself, yeah, you.
None of us are. Toronto FC beat Atlanta 1-0 last night to extend its unbeaten streak to 9 games. Now, before the game, it was learned that the MLS would not be handing out its supporter shield trophy to the team with the best regular season record. I guess just 2020 being what it is, they decided it's not worth handing out in this strange season. And that is something that has TFC coach Greg Vanney quite upset.
The legacy of a club, the legacy of a player, and a legacy of teams and fans is how many trophies you lift. And that's why you do this. And so to find out with 5 games that, like I said, if a handful of people decide that there is no trophy for whatever group wins it, and right now we're in pole position, is for me, it's really kind of disgraceful. It's losing the plot about what professional sports is all about.
Yeah. So TFC right now is 41 points. They're the best team in the league in terms of points. Philadelphia is second best. They have 35. So this is Toronto's trophy to lose, and they did lose it. They're not going to hand it out. I don't have an issue with saying you're not going to hand out the trophy because this is just such a strange year, but with 5 games to go, this is when you make the announcement?
Yeah, it's the timing of it is weird, but look, you're playing these games.
Yeah.
Baseball is about to hand out its piece of metal
yep.
to either
whatever
the Dodgers or
thing. Yeah.
The Rays off of a 60-game regular season. That's what they put together in the pandemic. The NHL and the NBA stopped for 4.5 months. And the Stanley Cup and the Larry O'B still got awarded, and quite rightfully so.
Yeah.
I mean,
don't get it.
If you're playing these games, I get it. It's not a full schedule. It's not the 30-plus games you play.
But it's the same for everybody, and
exactly.
Everybody's competing at the same level, so there
yeah.
should be a trophy.
Yeah,
or at least a participation ribbon.
It's just kind of crazy that they waited, right?
Yeah,
that's my thing. Why now? Why not before the season starts?
Yeah, and quickly, golf. Jason Kokrak winning the CJ Cup in Vegas, and Phil Mickelson won the Champions Tour event with a 3-stroke win over Mike Weir. Yes, it marked only the third time the two lefties finished 1-2 at a PGA-sanctioned event. Phil wins $300,000. Weir picks up a check for $176,000. Not bad.
If you ever want a good laugh, go to Phil Mickelson's Instagram page. He has lessons. He talks about when he goes into tournaments. He talks about activating his calves, and it's quite entertaining.
Our two favorite lefties,
yep.
Phil Mickelson and Kevin Barker, are just owning Instagram. Owning Instagram. Yeah. I also want to buy a place in Barker's building.
That's
how nice is that, Pat?
Hell of a balcony
he's got. I'll wear a mask. Can we get invited over?
Like, guys, hang on. It's a very exclusive neighborhood. Only the best and brightest live in that area.
Oh, he lives in the same building.
So just, be
full. You live in the same building?
Not in the same building.
Oh.
We live in a nicer building.
Oh.
No.
Bigger balcony than that?
No, we don't have a balcony.
That is gorgeous.
Yeah.
Gorgeous.
It's a nice area.
Yeah.
Drop by and visit.
Check out Hughes Untuck It catalog in his walk-in closet. And you could have your own Untuck It closet after today. We're giving away $700. We've never given away this much in the way of gift cards, but we're on a 6-game losing skid. We give $100 away each day, but the number carries over if we don't have a winner. $700. The phone lines are open right now. 416-870-0590. 416-870-0590. We play All or Nothing. And then Stephen Brunt at the top of the hour. All right, if we don't give these gift cards away, Hugh is just going to take them home with him. So we need to...
You might get lost. Same.
We need to make this happen. $700 in Untuck It gift cards. All or nothing, 3 true or false questions. Got to get them all right or all wrong. So if you get the first one wrong, don't hang up. You just got to get the next 2 intentionally incorrect. Let's go up to Wasega Beach and Mike. Hello, Mike.
Gentlemen, happy Monday to you.
Happy Monday to you. Good luck to you. We badly want to give these away. Let's get
well,
to
I'll
it.
I'll tell you what.
Okay.
If I win, I'm going to buy you $200 worth.
Come on, Mike. I am officially your biggest fan right now.
What's in it for the rest of us?
Well.
Come on, I'll share it with you.
I don't got much to spend if I win it. So.
Okay. All right. Well, we'll talk later about why you picked you, Mike. That's all right. Ziggy.
Now that the Packers lost, there are just three undefeated teams left in the NFL. The Steelers, Titans, and Seahawks. True or false?
I'm going to go with true.
That is correct. They're all 5-0. By the way, next week, Pittsburgh and Tennessee play their rescheduled game from a couple weeks ago.
All right, Mike. So you sound like that. You sound like a football guy, and Hugh's question is along those lines.
Yeah, Mike, I'm cheering for you. You don't have to give me anything. I will not accept it, but I am cheering for you. Here we go.
Excellent.
Both New York teams in the NFL, the Giants and the Jets, are the only two winless teams remaining in the league. The only two winless teams remaining. Is that true or is that false?
I'm going to go false.
Yes, yes,
yes. It's the Jets alone because the Giants beat the Washingtons yesterday.
Go Giants.
Yeah, don't even get me started on that. The Jets were shut out by the Dolphins. They are 0-6.
All right, Mike, ooh, you're a hockey guy?
Oh, that's my sport.
You're a Leaf fan?
Oh, you know it.
Okay, and you know the hometowns of some players. We know.
Let's hold.
Okay, here we go. All right. Last one for you for $700 in Nantucket gift cards. Jumbo Joe Thornton is a Toronto Maple Leaf. He was born in southwestern Ontario in the beautiful, lovely town of St. Thomas. St. Thomas, true or false?
False.
No!
Oh!
Tough one, though. That's a tough one,
guys. I was that close to getting a couple more on.
Well, because we know he's London area, right? We know he's London area, but that one hurts.
It's the most upset Hugh's ever been, I think.
Oh, my goodness, Ziggy. How do I go
think of Hugh's last 24 hours. His Washington football team lost to an alleged football team, and he's not getting $200 of the $700 untucked. Maybe the $800 winner tomorrow will give you $300 or $400, you, and it'll be worth your while. Tomorrow, we will attempt to give away $800 in untucked gift cards. As long as Hugh doesn't steal them afterwards.
They're around here somewhere.
Ross Tucker at the top of the 8 o'clock hour. John Paul Morosi to preview the World Series and look back on the Championship Series at 8:30. Gord Stellick, the host of Leafs Nation pre and post here on Sportsnet 590, The Fan, coming up at 7:30 on the Joe Thornton signing. We'll get to the Thornton signing. We'll get to the baseball stuff with our buddy Stephen Brunt from Writer's Block next. A sock hop, anyway. What is a sock hop?
Sock hop?
It was like the 50s dances, right? The dances in the 1950s, the sock hop?
Oh, sure.
Hugh says people used to dance in their socks, take off their shoes so that they wouldn't mark up the gym floors. It was in the 1950s, the sock hops.
They're dance they're dance events for teenagers.
In the 50s. Yes. Yeah.
All right. Well, 50s. Yeah, I'm glad we got that out of the way.
Yeah. Just wanted to.
Something I learn every day.
What the hell?
It's always something. So I got today, tick today off.
And now you can go home. Oh, wait, you're already there. You learn something every day. Now you can go home. Gord Stellick will join us in about 25 minutes, and we'll get into the Joe Thornton decision to come to Toronto. The fact he talked to Joe Montana. Talked to Joe Montana about...
Was that not the best part? Well, there's two parts of the
That's a
the
name
media
drop.
Availability.
That's a good name drop.
Oh, yeah.
That is a
Mario
solid...
Mario Lemieux told me never to drop names, ever.
Yeah.
So
I got a new phone once, and the first guy to text me and give me crap was Sidney Crosby. That might have been your best name drop on this show so far.
Honestly, I feel like when Joe said that, that was him, like, setting his place, like, you want to know what? I'm going to name drop. I'm going to own all the email media availabilities this year. This is my place. I feel like that was just him just letting the media know, like, I know people. I'm a big deal. Be careful when you come at me. That's what I feel it was part of. You know what I mean? Like, oh, did you talk to anybody? Well, yeah, actually I did. You know, I talked to Joe Montana.
I know people. If you come at me, what's Joe Montana is tough.
No, but I just feel like
in the background.
I just feel like that was him saying, I feel like that was him. I mean, there was a reason he said that. And I feel like it was for the media to be like, this is who I am. I'm a big deal. So watch out.
Well, here's the clip, the Montana clip.
I actually talked to Joe Montana. I think Joe gave me some good advice. You know, he just talked about leaving San Francisco and going to Kansas City. Yeah, and it was just, you know, that conversation meant a lot of, you know, a couple, you know, people outside of hockey.
Yeah, but the if you catch the 5 seconds leading up to it, you could tell he's like, I really don't want to name drop right here, but I'm going to anyways because I'm going to run things around here. So watch out.
Yeah, well, anytime for the rest of this show's existence, Ziggy, that I have an opinion you disagree with, This is going to be my response.
I actually talked to Joe Montana.
Yeah. So any time, if I come out there and say the Toronto Maple Leafs are going to finish in 31st place in the NHL next season, and you're going to go, what the hell are you on? I'm going to say,
I actually talked to Joe Montana.
Yeah. The Cincinnati Bengals are going to win the Super Bowl this year.
I actually talked to Joe Montana.
I mean, I wasn't expecting that when he's like, actually, yeah, I
of Joe all the Montana, people,
yeah, was not the name.
Do you think? Do you think Cody Bellinger knows who Joe Montana is? If he doesn't know who Jerry Seinfeld is,
I bet you he doesn't know Joe Montana either. Wouldn't surprise me.
We're at that point in our lives where the people we grew up watching, the kids these days don't even know who they are anymore. I actually talked to Joe Montana. Here's the context of the Joe Montana thing. Joe Montana didn't have a choice. The 49ers in the early 90s said to Joe Montana, we're going with Steve Young. Like, thanks for everything, pal. Thanks for the decade. Thanks for all the Super Bowls, but we're moving on. And it was the right decision for the 49ers. So Montana was like, well, I got to peace out. Like, I'd love to finish my career here, but I got to move on. This is different. I think San Jose would have brought Joe Thornton back.
Yeah, they wanted to bring him back.
Right?
I like this play, actually, Joe going somewhere else. I don't mind it. I feel like he can even be better than he has been the last 2 years.
Rejuvenates him a bit, right?
Just
a goal.
Different systems, players. He's in a massive media market. He's close to home. He's going to have his family there. You know what I mean? Just have his kids around the grandparents. It's just a lot of different things. Young, fast team. Different than San Jose. A lot different makeup.
Well, and Ziggy, look, I mean, it's the same thing as Spezza. They're making $700K. And
yeah, if they don't work out, it doesn't matter.
Well, from the Leafs' perspective, but also from their perspective, what is $700K at the end of the day this coming season? You're getting 20% lopped off
30.
The top. Like, you're getting taxed. You got your other stuff, your agent fees and stuff you pay. Like, they're not broke.
They're going to be losing money this year.
Yeah, there you. They're going to be able to write off their losses.
No, listen to this though. Well, you can't technically write off your losses in Canada. Like you can't do your like in the U.S. Anything you spend towards your performance. So any training in the summertime, you buy a bike to train with or hockey equipment, you can't write that off in Canada. You're not allowed. So there is no write-offs. But all joking aside, 700 is going to turn in to 350 because it's going to be a 30%. It's going to be a 20% escrow plus a 10% rollback or whatever they're going to do with the pandemic.
And
they're
not going to
get that 30. Then you're going to get taxed on half of that. So now you're at 175. Then you got all your 175. I'll tell you right now, Joe Thornton is losing money this year at 175 after taxes. I'll tell you that. I'll never forget. I made 50 grand in the minors one year, and I was like, oh, you know what? I saved like 7 or 8 grand to go away at the end of the year and, you know, take the parents out for dinner and, you know, buy a couple things, you know, in the summertime. And I was training with another guy, and he's like, he was just sitting there, we're like on the track at York, and he's like, you took home money from 50 grand? And I was like, yeah. He goes, I made 750 last year. I didn't bring home one penny.
Oh my God.
He was playing in LA. He said he didn't have $1 from 750 grand he made that year. So I just was like, I don't see 700 because this year 700 is going to turn into 175 for him. Like after he's going to rent a place downtown. Agent fees are going to be, you know, 10 grand. I mean, yeah, that's not including dinners, family. Like, I know it's a lot of money. I know it's not right. 175 after tax, and 99% of people out there are saying that's enough to like live off of for 10 years. Right. But when you're used to making, you know, 5, 6, 7 million your whole career, once you go down to 700, like unless you, you know, turn everything off, it's tough.
Gord Stellick, the host of Leafs Nation Pre and Post, we're bumping him up and he's going to join us now. How are you, sir?
I'm good, gentlemen. How are you guys doing?
We're doing great. So we've been going over the Joe Thornton stuff and we love the name drop that Joe Thornton gave the media here, Gord. And I told Ziggy about 10 minutes ago, any crappy opinion that I ever give on this show that he disagrees with, this is just going to be my reaction.
I actually talked to Joe Montana.
Yeah. Any opinion that I have that Ziggy doesn't like, I actually talked to Joe Montana. It's good enough for me. I mean, this is a homecoming for Joe Thornton, and he obviously really believes that the Toronto Maple Leafs are Stanley Cup contenders. I look at the work Kyle Dubas has done to remake the roster around the so-called Big Four or the Big Six, if you want to include Morgan Rielly and Freddie Anderson. And I think that this coming season, whenever it starts, is now the turning point of this franchise for the so-called Big Six. We've completely changed course around you. You've got to go get it done. And if you don't, we're going to have to make even more significant changes.
Yeah, no question. No question about that. I mean, I'll go with the Big Six, and I'll add Zach Hyman in as a kind of an important seventh cog as well. And really, they've been, I think when John Tavares came, people got a little too far ahead of themselves in whatever the odds were. They were favored or close to being favored to win the Stanley Cup. But certainly, it's put them in that echelon. And they had been moving that way. Then last year, took a step back in the regular season. You know, 2 years ago, Andreas Janssen, Kasperi Kapanen scored 20 goals each. They were going to be part of this next moving ahead. Now they're not. So they've changed a lot of the pieces around them. And I've liked the changes they made, but there's no question that, and it's not about getting rid of guys. It's this is who they've committed to contractually. They have no choice and because they're really kind of stuck with the money they paid there. Flexibility wise, it doesn't give you a lot of things to do, but you know, they are the guys. Yeah, coaching change happened. It was obviously a toxic situation for whatever reason starting last year. And it's make or break as far as this group being together in its entirety down the road.
With Thornton yesterday, Gordo, did you not? Were you not surprised a little bit that the first name he brought up with why he came here and he kept talking about it was Freddie Anderson and how good he is, and he's one of the best goalies in the league, and that was one of the big reasons why he came here?
Yeah, I was. I was, Ziggy, and I think, you know, maybe you look at San Jose and he sees a team that probably should have won a Stanley Cup in his estimation and never had the goaltending up to what other teams did deep in the playoffs. So he would have seen a lot of Freddie when Freddie was in California. And I'm still very big on Freddie. I mean, I know every game seven, in this case, a game five this past summer, haven't been his best games, but I've always been very big on Freddie as the guy. And it was, Joe's not going to say stuff just to be politically correct. I mean, he obviously feels that way about Freddie Anderson. I think that's a good reminder to a lot of Leaf fans about what their goaltending's thought of.
With Gord Stellick. So as we sit here today, Gord, and understanding that things can change very quickly once a season begins, but all things are equal, there are no injuries, all of that, the usual caveats. As we sit here right now, Tavares and Matthews are 1-2 up the middle. Who is 3-4 and 5 if needed?
Well, now you obviously have to hope that, you know, Kerfoot can come back with a good season. You don't have Freddie Gauthier as an option anymore. You've, you know, changed that around with some of the veterans that way. So, you know, I would say Spezza is a 4. Joe, where he fits in, again, there's some flexibility there. So that's what I'd be looking right now. Kerfoot is a 3, and we'll kind of go from there. And then you got a bunch of different options. I mean, Nick Robertson, a healthy Mikheyev are guys that I'm keen to see as far as can they fill the roles that that Kapanen and Janssen did in other years. To me, that's going to be the more important thing. The top two lines are the ones that are going to have to be more of a difference maker than they were last year.
And just again on the Thornton Spezza stuff too. We don't yet know when the season will start. We don't know how many games there will be. We don't know how many threes and fours and sixes teams are going to have to play. I suppose it is possible that the Spezzas and Thorntons of the world are given nights off. Right?
Absolutely.
That's a possibility,
yeah.
Too.
Yeah, and I mean, they probably would be anyway, but the thinking is that whenever the schedule starts, that it'll be a more compressed schedule to get as many games as possible. It's doubtful they'll get 82, so they want to get as many. So, yeah, that'll be part of the thing, and that's why you're seeing, you know, Scott, as far as, you know, solid backup goaltenders. Goaltending tandems are more in vogue right now because the depth is going to come into play.
Do you think it was a concern at all from Leafs management standpoint, Gord, that this was maybe, you know, we're going to bring Thornton in because I'm unsure of our leadership group, and I want guys maybe a little bit more vocal, because we know, you know, John Tavares isn't going to be the rah-rah captain. He's more of that silent type, lead by example. Do you think they're going to bring in, the reason bringing in Thornton was more for that than his on-ice stuff?
I don't know if it's more for it, but probably as much for it, Ziggy. Without Ron Hainsey and Patrick Marleau, two different kind of veteran leaders, you know, Hainsey was a very underrated leader that way, and not being there. And to me, it was last year when Sheldon Keefe a couple of times just said the line, we're not a very mature team, and not saying they're immature, but basically about those, they had too many dead ass times while he was coaching. I mean, they were behind the eight ball. Once he took over, they got back in the playoffs, which is great, but they had a tepid effort in Florida just before the pause happened. The California trip was brutal as far as their effort went for a team buying to make the playoffs. And I think, you know, you look at bringing Spezza back and adding Wayne Simmonds and Zach Bogosian as well. I think they felt that was a key as far as those kind of spices. They needed some veteran, they needed some leadership as an example for the other guys, the core guys, the core young guys. The youth is their strength, but also it appears that they have to get to that next level about that maturity, about closing the deal.
With Gord Stellick, the co-host of Leafs Nation Pre and Post here on Sportsnet 590, The Fan, you're listening to Leadoff. We've had a lot of conversations about this when stuff started to get floated last week, Gord. The idea, and again, it will be dependent on where we are in the pandemic and border situations and whether it remains closed. I can't get the idea of a Canadian division out of my mind. I think in as weird a time as we are in, let's get weird. And if the border is going to prevent teams from traveling back and forth to the United States, let's keep all seven in Canada and let's lack a little, in a good way for once, let's lack a little civility. Seven fan bases who will definitely be more than happy to get into one another's grill over that. I think the possibilities and the fun could be endless just with the chirping, social media, all that stuff.
Well, I'm excited by it. And I think it's a constructive way the NHL looking at it and saying the reality is there's a lot of variables. They don't control. The border is the biggest one. So, you know, why not, you know, why don't we say not take it to your advantage, but to your point a little bit that way, or take advantage of it. And I think probably there'll be three other 8-team divisions in the States and then the 7-team division in Canada. And when you go to Vancouver, you'll play back-to-back, you know, in 2 days there and those kinds of things to, you know, cut down on travel. I love it. All Canadian, I mean, Ottawa's doing a serious rebuild, but there's the really positives in every other Canadian market. And those are always, you know, those are always special games. Those are always tougher tickets to get. And I can see the NHL releasing a schedule that doesn't include the second half, just a half at a time. So they kind of look at it, whatever the block would be, but have this idea. And then at some point they figure out, will the border be open and do they want to open it up and, you know, to the 31 teams playing each other a little bit or just keep it going. But I can see that being the way they start next year. And I'm like you, I think that'll be great. I think that'll be dynamite.
How do you rank the Canadian teams? So if four teams are going to make the playoffs, three weren't, what four do you think get in right now with the moves they've done so far this offseason?
Well, isn't it interesting of Montreal that was considered a non-playoff team? Now they assume they will be in the playoffs. Then, you know, I still don't know about that. I picked Winnipeg to win the Stanley Cup 2 years ago. I mean, do they bounce back? Edmonton's, I think, has got to be in the playoffs. Calgary's made some great moves. Vancouver. So, I mean, really, of the six teams, and again, for the Leafs, it won't be the moves they made. It'll be the core they have. It'll be a difference. I would expect them to be one of the four, and Ottawa wouldn't be. I still don't know about Montreal, but otherwise, like wow, I don't know. Like, that'd be great. I'd like to sit back and watch it. There's really not a lot of weak sisters here except for Ottawa.
Did Vancouver save itself somewhat by poaching Nate Schmidt out of Vegas? Because obviously they lost Markstrom. They lost, Tanev off the back end. They had had it shaped up as a rough offseason, and then Vegas had to divest themselves of somebody to get Petrangelo in there, and they went in and plucked Nate Schmidt. Yeah. I've always liked Nate Schmidt.
I have too. And so, yeah, that was a good save. And Tanev's kind of an underrated loss. He played really, really well for them, and that's a good pickup for Calgary. And the key will be Thatcher Demko. Let's face it, Jacob Markstrom, they were doing everything to figure out a contract with him. And had the pandemic not happened and the flat cap, they would have figured something out. But he played those three games that were unbelievable. So it looks like he's ready and take a run with it. If he proves not to be, then that could be a little bit of a problem. Because, you know, during the regular season, Markstrom was probably their MVP.
Always good to hear your voice, Gord. Thanks for bumping up at last minute to join us here now. And we'll certainly reach out soon.
Sounds good. Have a good day, guys.
Gord Stellick is the co-host with Nick Alberga of Leafs Nation pre and post here on Sportsnet 590 The Fan.
It's hard to pick. Like, if you have to pick four of seven, it's how difficult is it to pick who would make the playoffs? Like, I think it's tough to pick a top four Canadian teams right now.
We'll have to workshop that one and brainstorm.
I don't want to answer.
Oh,
it.
No. You came
I'm
up.
Asking the question.
No,
hey,
no, you're I'm, not. I'm tomorrow morning, we'll rank them 1 to 7. That's your homework for the rest of the day. I'm looking at the clock, Siggy. It's 7:26. And I had a conversation with.
I actually talked to Joe Montana.
And you know what he told me? He told me, we got to take a break. Ross Tucker at the top of the hour. Maybe he's talked to Joe Montana. John Paul Morosi coming up as well. The Dodgers and the Rays, they could not be more diametrically opposed in terms of how they build their teams and how they spend money. We're getting set for a Dodgers-Rays World Series. We'll talk about that, get back into some NFL stuff as well coming up. Talking to Joe Montana.
How's Joe doing?
He's excellent. I was talking to Joe Montana and I said, what kind of bumper music should we bring in? And he said 1979, the Pumpkins. Shout out to the best birth year out there. Best 6 months of my life. I don't remember a thing. 1979. Joe Thornton, a 1979 baby as well.
Good thing for Joe Montana, or else Joe wouldn't be a Leaf.
This is like my world's colliding. My first favorite quarterback helped to convince Joe Thornton to play for my favorite hockey team.
Who were you expecting? Like, what hockey player were you expecting Joe Thornton to say there? Because that's what I was thinking after.
Ray Bourque.
Yeah, I was thinking like a Ray Bourque or...
You don't think of Joe Thornton as a Boston Bruin. I know he played there for, five or six, 7 years, right?
I remember him there.
Well, of course
played
we do.
Mike Keenan.
Well, yes, he did. I'm not saying he wasn't a Bruin. We think of him as a lifetime San Jose Shark, even though he played like 6 or 7 years with the Bruins at the start of his career. I might be over-exaggerating that. He was the first overall pick in 97 and was into the league right away, and he got traded in November of 05. So he played for the Bruins for a while.
I remember when he started and Samsonov was their other. He went like
Sergei
fourth or
Samsonov.
Fifth.
Yes. What,
in the same draft.
You're right.
And I remember watching both of them before they got to the NHL. And when Thornton got to the Bruins, it was a rough couple years. Like, it's going to be a rough couple of years for most 18, 19-year-olds, but I think he had a little bit more of a difficult time. Plus, you have the first overall, you better be a superstar now.
Well, and your team is bad because there's a reason your team has the first overall pick. They're bad.
And he struggled. And, you know, when I talk to people close to that situation, Mike Keenan had a lot to do with getting his career started in a fact where he pushed Joe Thornton. That's the story I got behind it. And I'm sure everyone knows who Mike Keenan is, knows the way he does some crazy stuff in the room. And yeah, he pushes players. I'm not saying he did a lot of the Mike Babcock stuff, but those old school coaches, they find the right buttons to push and for you to play.
And another guy that he would have played for very young in Boston was Pat Burns. Right, because Pat Burns got fired by the Leafs in, I want to say, February or March of 96. And he won the cup with the Devils in 2003. But in between, there was a 2 or 3 year period where Pat Burns was head coach in Boston. So imagine that. Burns and Keenan are two of your early coaches in the National Hockey League. I mean, Burns, he was an X's and O's guy too. Like, it would not have been easy for Joe Thornton. He two better guys you probably couldn't learn from, but it would not have been easy, that learning process.
It's probably miserable when you get a coach that pushes you and you're a player that not that everything's come easy to Thornton, but I remember watching him with Sault Ste. Marie. It was just like point night. I can remember him going to the Oshawa Generals game. He was playing with the Sioux and he was, you know, 16 years old, and it was just, he's been dominant his whole life. And a lot of times, I don't care what draft pick you go, a lot of players struggle to find their game at the NHL level. And it comes through experience, it comes through time, it comes through maybe you click with the right line mate or D partner, or you have a coach that really likes you, but a couple things have to go right. When you're a high draft pick, you pretty much have to prove you can't play And when you're further down or you're a free agent, you have to prove you can. So there was a lot of pressure on Thornton when he came in. It was almost like when Keenan got a hold of him and said, hey, the way you played in junior, you can't play like that here. You want to be a winner. You want to be the best in the league. This is what you have to do. I feel like Mike Keenan's that coach, but credit to Thornton for, you know, playing for a coach like that and actually applying it to your game. Well, it's one thing to have a coach and hard on you, but when you don't give up and you accept that challenge, that's the rewarding part as a player.
What was the year that the Bruins got eliminated from the playoffs by the Habs and Thornton was pointless in the series and everybody was crapping on him? Everybody
was that the one where they gave up the 3-1 lead?
It might have been. Right. I can't remember those details off the top of my head, but what came out later was that he was playing with at least one and maybe two cracked ribs. Like, he was just out there.
I think Razor was in net.
Okay, so that would have been 03-04 then, because that was Raycroft's Calder year.
Yeah.
So Andrew Raycroft's Calder year was the year before the lockout. And so that was effectively it for Thornton and Boston, Ziggy, because the next year there was no hockey. And then at the end of November in 2005, so the 05-06 season, the year out of the lockout, is when he was traded to San Jose.
Mm-hmm.
So that was he tried to play through broken ribs, cracked ribs, and it didn't go well for him. But people didn't know, I'm sure internally, obviously they did, but people outside didn't know the extent of it. At that point, that's what ran him out of Boston. You look at the career he's had, and maybe he's the personality type too. Like Thornton is very much a fun-loving, uber intense when he's on the ice, but like a fun-loving guy. He just fit the California mold perfectly. Boston, people say we're tightly wound here in Toronto, we're too focused, the media's too hard, blah, blah, blah. I don't think, maybe Philadelphia, New York's so big and there's so much going on. You got two baseball teams, you got two, arguably three hockey teams if you count the Devils. You got two basketball teams, you got two at least in every sport. There's so much going on that the poop that players take gets divided. In Boston and Philadelphia, if things aren't going well, it can spiral really, really quickly. Anybody who says Toronto is a tough place to play, go live in Boston for a couple of years and watch how they cover their teams, particularly the Red Sox. Or go live in Philadelphia, particularly the Eagles.
They do cover them closely, the Eagles, the Red Sox, the Canadiens, and Montreal. But nothing compares to Toronto. There,
crap. No way.
I'm telling you, nothing compares.
Ask Carey Price if anything compares to Montreal.
I know they're going to say there's nothing worse than Montreal. I'm letting you know, though. I never played in Montreal. I had a lot of friends who did. And I got a lot of friends who've come to Toronto. Let me tell you, the stories I get from Toronto are the worst. But that's what you get. This is the big stage. Come on. Yeah, you're right. They lost 4-3 to Montreal in that year. We're talking about the Bruins 03-04 playoffs.
Right. So Thornton right before the lockout.
Thornton led the team in scoring with 73 points in 77 games. And then the playoffs, 7 games, -6, no points.
Right, and he had cracked ribs. But he wasn't forgiven for that.
Raycroft was in that. You know what Raycroft's numbers were that year? Like, how good they were? A 2.05 goals against with a .926 save percentage.
How good were those numbers? I talked to Joe Montana, man. And this is what Joe Montana said to me. And did you see Razor troll himself on Twitter?
That's what I was going to bring that up.
Okay, because right? Somebody...
So the tweet was, which player did you expect to be a superstar but didn't pan out?
And Raycroft responded with Andrew Raycroft.
Razor's a beauty. Just a legend. He's a legend in these parts for sure.
We'll get him on this week. And
yeah, at some point, we got to get him on just for that tweet. Forget about the, because he knows Thornton well, you know? So.
Of course. We're teammates.
Yeah.
He also posted a very cool photo of him with Gord Downie.
Yeah, I saw that.
Back
yeah,
in the
that
day, because
nice,
Gord
nice
Downie,
touch,
the
yeah.
third anniversary of Gord Downie's passing was mm-hmm. yeah. was this weekend. So that was a cool shot. We got the Rays and Dodgers in the World Series, and I'm just waiting for that first opinion that, oh, the little engine that could go Rays go, the big bad Dodgers, you know, in the very same way the big bad Yankees. Why do we vilify teams? Why do we vilify teams that spend money?
It's just, people love to see teams fail when they go out of their way to win. It's like when a team tries really hard, it's like, oh man, I'd love to see them go down.
No, but you know what it also is? I don't know if it's like a relatability factor or something. You know, Tampa Bay has got a $28 million payroll. So they have to be really, really smart about the players they pick and where they put them and how they use them, because they just don't have any money to spend. So they must be doing it smarter than everybody else. They made a bloody movie out of Billy Beane and the Oakland A's in the early 2000s for the very same thing. For the very same thing. I'll tell you what, Andrew Friedman, who is the vice president of baseball operations for the Los Angeles Dodgers, he left the Tampa Bay Rays to take that job. He's the guy who invented the wheel in Tampa Bay, and now he's doing it with the Dodgers. The only difference is he's got money to spend to retain the players that he drafts and develops when they get expensive.
Yeah. The reason people don't like the Rays right now is because they've changed the game. They've made it a bullpen game, have they not? Like do you not see more teams following that blueprint next year?
Well,
do
you remember the conversation we had with Shai Davidi a few weeks ago, where Shai was not entirely in line with my point of view that the Rays' sole aim is to suppress salaries, but that salary suppression is a byproduct of their approach that their owner and that owners around baseball obviously don't mind. So the notion is, okay, with a starting pitcher, if you go the third time through the order, the opponent has seen you twice already, each hitter, and you're a little more tired because by pitch 80, you're obviously not as fresh as you are at pitch 1, pitch 5, pitch 10. So if you limit guys to 3 or 4 innings, or if you start with a flame-throwing reliever in the first inning who gets you the first 3 to 6 outs, and then you bring in your, quote, bulk guy, your starting pitcher, just that he's not starting, and he throws you 3 or 4 innings in the middle of the baseball game, well, that's a more effective way to go about plotting things out. One of the byproducts of that, if I cede to Shai's point of view, one of the byproducts, convenient byproducts of that, is salary suppression. What I like about the Dodgers, though, is that they will go that route sometimes, but they still have aces. They have Walker Buehler. Clayton Kershaw, when his back is okay, is still an ace in this league. Oh, Dustin May didn't, no, he threw the first inning last night on just a day or two's rest. Didn't look great in his Game 5 start, but is a good young pitcher for this team. They're just, when their guys get expensive, they will retain them. When Tampa Bay gets guys who get too expensive in arbitration or hit free agency, they've moved on from them already. They'll trade them off. That's the difference.
So do you put the Rays and the Jays in the kind of the same boat where it's, you know, like they don't spend the $200 million that other teams spend because they just don't want to spend the money?
I'll tell you, owning a baseball team is expensive, and I think the test will be when Bo and Vladdy, if he works out, when those guys start to get expensive, and there are other very good young prospects in the system who will come up, and some will make it and some won't. When those guys get expensive, are you willing to spend the $10 million or $12 million in arbitration, $15 to $20 million if they get really good? And then when they hit free agency, are you going to be willing to go 6, 7, 8 years at $200 plus million for a guy like Bo Bichette to keep him here. That's going to be the test. We don't have the answer to those questions yet, but we will, Ziggy, within a few years.
I wish they would dangle some carrots in front of guys, and I'm sure they do with some guy or some players. I just wish they would dangle like, hey, you want this contract right now to like a Bo or Vlad? You know what I mean? Just give him some kind of
like somebody would say to me. Somebody would say to me, Hyunjin Ryu is a good example of a willingness to spend money, and I would say, okay, I'll grant you that. But Hyunjin Ryu's contract was for 4 years, or is for 4 years, 3 years left. That contract will expire before Bo and Vlad and Kevin, and name the names of the guys who might make mm-hmm. it, before any of those guys get what we would consider to be somewhat prohibitively expensive in arbitration eligibility. So that money will, the Ryu contract will be off the books by the time that you really need to start paying the young core. And that's what makes it a great move and effectively a low-risk move at this point. You get a really good pitcher. You hope he stays healthy. You can afford to overpay him slightly or give him the extra year because it took the fourth year that Ryu was not being offered by other teams to get him to Toronto. But that contract is not going to run in to the salary demands of the Bichettes of the world as those guys get more expensive. So it was shrewd. But it also is not, it is not an example of this organization being willing to spend when it comes nut crunching time. So I think mm-hmm. we're still 3 or 4 years away from that. But I would imagine that they would be, because why would you draft, develop, and have a quality player like Bo Bichette if he gives you 3 or 4 more really good years here through his early 20s? Why would you not want to lock him in? The money's going to have to be there. It's going to have mm-hmm. to be there.
Yeah, so, If you can't afford guys towards the end, why not just try to lock them up earlier? That's my only. But guys don't want to do that. I mean, we've heard Bichette talk about it, right? There's no rush right now.
There's no rush. And let's just say in 2 years, he's had two really nice 162-game seasons, and he's there in arbitration eligibility, which means he's 2 or 3 years from free agency, and the Blue Jays sit him down and say, Bo, let's do an 8-year contract right
yes.
now. This is what you're worth in arbitration per our estimations should you achieve the statistics we project you to achieve. 10 this year, 14, 15. These are hypothetical numbers. 14,
yeah.
15 next year, and your final year of arbitration, 18 to 20. And then in free agency, and that's where the negotiation begins. Okay, Bo thinks he's a $25 to $30 million a year player 3 or 4 years from now, inflation, et cetera. Okay, so 25 to 30 over 3 or 4 years per, that's into the $100+ million range, plus the 3 arbitration years, you're looking at 6 and 175 or 7 and 200, like somewhere in that neighborhood. That's what, mm-hmm. And again, Bo has got to put the numbers up to be worthy of that conversation, but we see him as being somebody who is capable of putting those numbers up. So that's the type of conversation that will happen in a few years. And I mean, you look at that Dodgers team right now. Clayton Kershaw makes $31 million. Tampa Bay pays its entire roster $28 million. Mookie Betts this year got paid $27 million.
That's the best ever.
This, of course,
that's just awesome. I love it.
Now it's all prorated with the shortened season. But Mookie Betts by himself would have made $27 million this year in a normal year. Tampa Bay pays everybody $28 million. Next year, Mookie will be north of $30 million on his new contract that he signed, the extension with the Dodgers. So I don't know. We love to celebrate cheapness because I think that it takes extra smarts to be shrewd and to really plug guys into the right. You have to have everything just perfect and go just right for you and have the, because if you can't just buy a World Series, well then you gotta draft properly and develop properly, and then you gotta have guys who can bounce around the diamond and play different positions and the lefty righty platoons and all. Like, I just think everybody thinks it's just so much smarter because you can't spend the money. And I'm sitting there going, the Dodgers are just as smart, and they got oodles of cash. Oodles of cash. A silent Vic in my ear. It is 7:52. I didn't talk to Joe Montana. I didn't talk to Joe Montana. I had a one-way conversation with Silent Vic, and I didn't say a word. What you watching? You will be like, you gave me 10 seconds for this. We'll do what you're watching next. Sorry, Hugh. I talked a lot.
That's okay. It's what you get paid to do. Right?
This one's on me. We're way late. What you watching?
What you watching? Well, hey, what's better than one Monday night football game? Two Monday night football games. 5 o'clock, you got the Chiefs at the Bills. Both these teams 4-1. No Le'Veon Bell for the Chiefs. He has to go through the protocol testing and everything before he can rejoin his teammates. I like the Bills in this one. They're at home. Chiefs are there for the taking, I think.
See, I'm with you.
Yeah.
Ziggy's on the Chiefs. Maybe we have to have an unhealthy gentleman's bet.
Sure.
Okay. Let's do it.
I don't know. People keep tweeting us like Kiefer stuff now. No, maybe there's going to be a Kiefer bet.
I'm not doing that.
Oh, no. Did we ask Silent Vic who he's with?
Silent Vic, are you with the Bills tonight? Yay or nay? No. He's taking the Chiefs.
Oh, so he's with the Chiefs.
Okay, so it's 2-2.
So you want to do 2-on-2 something?
Sure, we could.
All right.
I think we'll figure something out.
We'll make a 2-on-2 bet. Maybe Silk Gentile or Hayden will be our tiebreaker.
All right. And 8:15 tonight, it's the Cardinals at the Cowboys. It's Andy Dalton's first start.
How about them Cowboys?
In place of the injured Dak Prescott. I like the Cowboys at home. Andy Dalton's not your typical backup quarterback. He's a starting quarterback who just happens to be in the backup role.
Here's the thing. I have no idea what to expect from Arizona because we've seen good Arizona and we've seen bad.
Yeah. Arizona is a fun team to watch, though. DeAndre Hopkins and Kyler Murray, that's a nice combination.
Nasty dude.
Cardinals, guys.
Cowboys. Yep.
Mm-hmm. All right. Well, I mean, the DeAndre Hopkins trade is in no small part why Bill O'Brien is on the unemployment line. Ross Tucker for week 6 of the NFL Talk next. John Paul Morosi at 8:30. And at that point, you'll be able to brag, Ziggy, about your exploits in the batting cage. Say to Morosi, I hit 101.
I don't think Morosi was on board with me hitting a 90-mile-an-hour pitch.
Well, you'll have to put him in his place and correct him. By the way, our first of 5 consecutive days of videos will be out on social media shortly. I think the Ziggy entrance into the batting cage, you had been rained on, you had walked for 2 kilometers because you couldn't find parking.
That was all set up by Mike Gentile. That's what happened.
Yeah.
He made me walk 2 miles in the rain, get me a little bit upset. Then when I got in the batting cage, I went full rage.
Yes. Yeah. Yes. It was Mike Gentile's fault that the 6 available parking spots along the side of the building, you didn't notice them.
As long as you and Huey had parking spots, it's all that matters. As long as the stars of the show have parking, don't worry about it.
Yeah, as long as we don't get rained on, as long as Jeeves with the umbrella is there to greet us when we open our car door, we're good. What do we make of some of the results in week 6, as we talked about in the starting block of the show? Really, sometimes it's overreaction time in the NFL, but when you only play 16 games and once a week, you can let things linger for a while and draw some conclusions, get into your own head about it. The Packers with a big loss, the Patriots with their facility closed for most of the last week, lose at home to Denver, and the LA Rams lose last night in San Francisco. What does that tell us about them, and what does it tell us about the 49ers, who previously we were down on? To answer those questions and more, our buddy Ross Tucker from the Ross Tucker Football Podcast, from the Even Money Podcast, from the Fantasy Feast Podcast. Hello, sir.
Hey, how are you guys? I also have the College Draft Podcast, but that just made me wonder, do people in Canada care about college football at all?
A little bit.
It depends on the individual, Ross. I would say it this way. There's a lot of sort of internal research that is done by sports talk radio stations, and the people who tend to respond to those surveys don't look for a lot of U.S. college football content, but I think we all kind of watch on Saturdays or have interest. We put some money down on it. So I think it really depends on who you talk to. I really do.
Interesting. I mean, obviously, NHL's number one.
Yep.
What would you guys say are 2, 3, 4, 5, at least in the Toronto market?
Well, it depends on the season, right? So if we're in the dead of winter, the Raptors are right there with the Leafs. If we're in the spring or the early fall, depending on how they're doing, the Blue Jays are a big deal. In the dead of summer, the Jays are the summer sports team. And then the NFL, the thing with the NFL is that here in Toronto, whether you're partial to your own fantasy team, whether you're partial to the teams that you've put money down on a particular weekend, or whether you actually have a favorite team, like the Buffalo Bills geographically are the hometown team. But I'll just tell you about the house I grew up in. My dad's a Browns fan. My brother's a Dolphins fan. I'm a 49ers fan, and my mom loves the Carolina Panthers. So you can't find a household that's in agreement. Right. Usually. So
I'm from Reading, Pennsylvania, which is an hour outside of Philadelphia. And every single person's Eagles fan. Every once in a while you'll find a Cowboys fan, but that's mainly just because they want to be a jerk and stick it to the Eagles fans. And because, you know, when they were America's team in the 70s, 80s, or even like Emmett Smith and Troutman in the early 90s, but it's really interesting. Then you get to where I live now, which is Harrisburg, which is the state capital, and it's like 50-50 Steelers-Eagles. And then you get west of Harrisburg, and it's all Steelers. There will be some people in the city of Philadelphia that aren't Eagles fans. There'll be a few. I've never met someone from Pittsburgh that isn't a Steelers fan, or from someone from the state of Wisconsin, or northern Wisconsin at least, that isn't a Packers fan. Like there's absolutely 0% tolerance for any other fan base. It's like the highest concentration. It's crazy.
I was gonna say to you, Ross, I mean, maybe it would be one thing if you were, I don't know, pick an AFC team that plays the Eagles once every 4 years that's out on the West Coast, like, I don't know, a Denver Broncos fan, like a non-rival. I can't imagine wanting to be open about my fandom of the Dallas Cowboys living in Philadelphia. Like, I could walk down the street in a Michael Irvin jersey in downtown Philadelphia and feel, I don't think I'm going to get beaten up, but I mean, it's not going to be comfortable.
Let's put it this way. I certainly would not recommend it. And I don't mean, I don't think anyone's going to physically do you harm, but you're going to get some looks and you're going to get some verbal assaults. That's for sure. I mean, that's like, if you guys remember a couple of years ago in the NFC Championship game, all these Vikings fans were upset because of how they were treated by Eagles fans. And, you know, the two things I'll say three things about that, okay? Number one, it's not the way it should be. You know, like they should respect the fans of the other team and not say stuff to them. But number two, that's the way it is. I mean, and if you don't know that, that's on you. Like, that's the way it's always been. And by the way, number three, it was way worse when I was growing up. I mean, when I was growing up, my dad would take me to an Eagles game, and we'd be in the 700 level at the vet, right? That's the highest, that's the upper deck. And there would be the game on the field, and then there would be the game in the stands. And there would be at least 3 to 5 human interactions that I had never seen before in my life. Anytime my dad took me to an Eagles game, like a guy just get punched right in the face, a guy drunk fall down the steps, a girl in a Dolphins jersey because they were playing the Dolphins get a beer dumped on her head. I mean, it was like, it's so much better than it was back then. It's not even funny.
Well, yeah, I mean, and you got to know where you are. If I'm in the Northeast, New York, Philadelphia, Boston, I'm gonna behave very differently than I am if I'm in the Midwest. Like, I went to Busch Stadium to see a Cubs-Cardinals game in 2012. I was decked out head to toe in Cubs blue. and people were giving me hugs. Like, welcome to St. Louis. It's great to have you here. Like, the Midwest is just a different mindset than,
oh, yeah. No,
than the Northeast.
There's no question that the people in the Midwest are nicer. No question. But the people in the Northeast will tell you that they're soft. Right. Like that. It's all perspective, right? So they'll say they're soft and that you shouldn't treat the opposing team like that. So it is very, very different depending on where you grow up. That's for sure.
Ross Tucker is with us from the Ross Tucker Football Podcast, the Fantasy Feast Podcast, the Even Money Podcast, and the College Draft Podcast.
That's right. That's Boom. Right. And by the way, I don't know if we talked about this, but you realize 45 minutes from now, not even at this point, I'm hopping in my car and I'm driving very close to you guys. I'm driving 5 hours from central Pennsylvania up to Buffalo. I'm actually calling the Bills Chiefs game today on Westwood One. So as soon as that game kicks off at 5 p.m., I will immediately be the greatest Monday afternoon broadcaster in NFL history.
I love it. I feel like we're in the
I don't think there's ever been a Monday afternoon game before, so I'm going to take that.
And I feel like we're in the Pacific time zone because we're getting a 5 o'clock start for primetime football, Sunday or Monday. It's going to be great. Now, we've got like a show bet. There are a couple of us who think the Bills are going to win this game. And then there's Ziggy and another member of our team here, Ross, who think Kansas City is going to win this game. We got to come up with the terms because we just came up with this at about 7:55. I'm on the Bills because I have just a feeling about this one. I think Kansas City, between the close win at Los Angeles and then giving up 40 to Vegas last week, I think there are some holes there, and I want to see the Bills step up and really wrest control of the AFC East. But at the same time, the other side of my brain is saying, man, I have a hard time believing Kansas City's going to lose two in a row.
Yeah, I mean, I would lean Kansas City there just because of the track record, right? I mean, just because they're such a known commodity over the last couple of years. I mean, it certainly could be the case that the Bills come out and play better and win the game. And that would be great. You know, as you guys know, I played 3 years in Buffalo. But the Bills just don't have the same track record that this group of Chiefs happen to have. Not only that, that's number one. Number two, we know that the Bills played Tuesday night and the Chiefs played Sunday. It's a decent difference there. You know, it's a shorter week for the Bills. The Chiefs got 2 extra days. And then, you know, the injury report for this game is going to be really, really big. I mean, no John Brown changes the complexion of the Bills' offense a little bit. No Tre'Davious White against the Chiefs. Now, we'll see. You know, those guys have both been questionable all week, and we'll see what happens around game time. But those are two difference makers, especially Tre'Davious White. And then Matt Milano, who's the linebacker they like to have cover tight end. So you'd love to have Tre'Davious White on Tyreek Hill a lot. You'd love to have Matt Milano on Travis Kelce. And yet, you know, we'll find out when the inactives come out, which, if any of those guys are even playing. I mean, that was a big reason why they lost to the Titans.
How about the other late Monday night game, Ross, with the Cardinals and Cowboys? Obviously, Dak's out for the rest of the season. Dalton's going in. Who do you like tonight?
I think it's going to be an awesome game. I'm really looking forward to it. I actually, I've never done this before, but on the Even Money podcast, I did 3 teasers this week, and 5 of the 6 legs have come through for me. I just need the Cowboys to stay within either 8 or 8.5. I got to check tonight, and I think that they will. I think it's going to be a really good game. You know, it's interesting. Kyler Murray won 3 state championships in Jerry's world there. I think the Cowboys are going to be a little bit of a different team. We're going to see how they are without Dak. Do they still come out throwing a lot with the receiving core they have, or do they try to lean on the running game a little bit? It is fortuitous timing for them that the Cardinals no longer have Chandler Jones. You know, he went on IR with a torn bicep, so that helps. Cardinals don't have much of a pass rush without him. So honestly, I would say coin flip game. I guess I'll give the edge to Arizona just because Kyler Murray is just, I mean, it's like you can't touch him. He kind of reminds me of like Allen Iverson playing football, if that makes sense. Where, you know, I grew up Sixers fan, like Allen Iverson, like he was by far the fastest, quickest guy on the court every time you watch a Sixers play. That's what I see when I see Kyler Murray. So I'll take Arizona to win a close one by a field goal.
Ross Tucker is with us on Leadoff, Sportsnet 590, The Fan. Take us into your playing days, Ross, because I mean, we can develop narratives here in the media, and that's one thing, but I want the ex-player's point of view. If I'm a New England Patriot today, if I'm a Green Bay Packer today, or if I'm a Los Angeles Ram today, do I think differently of my team, or am I able to flush the tough loss? Maybe throw in the Cleveland Browns as well, although they were on the road in Pittsburgh, and that was going to be tough as it is. But specifically, the Patriots, Packers, and the Rams, how am I feeling about my team today versus how I was feeling about them going in to the games yesterday?
You know, well, there's a couple things here. First of all, and I know this is a cliche, and your listeners are going to be like, oh, come on, Ross, don't give us that. You almost wouldn't know if you saw a team at the airport an hour to an hour and a half after the game, whether they won or lost. You know, you put so much time into it during the week to prepare, and then you give it everything that you have, that once it's over, you actually do, you know, you calm down for 10 minutes in the locker room, then the media comes in, you talk to them, then you shower, you're on the bus, you text your wife or you call your family or whatever. Yep, I'm healthy, nothing, I didn't hurt anything. By the time you get to the airport, it's flushed, man. I mean, and I know, like, fans hold on to it a lot longer than players. You just can't. It's just not productive. Like, the best thing for those players is to really forget about it, move on, and start to worry about the next opponent as soon as possible. Now, deep down, do the Packers feel as invincible as they were feeling? No. You know, they were on top of the world, and they felt like they could beat anybody. They felt like, I mean, I had them number one in my Tuesday Ross Tucker podcast power rankings. That's not the case anymore. That's for sure, after the way the Bucks dismantled them. So there is, I think, for the Browns getting smoked by the Steelers and Ravens, I think for the Packers, I think there is part of you is you're not riding quite as high as you were. You're not kind of strutting around thinking we're as good as anybody. Now it's like, okay, we got to kind of go back to the drawing board and figure out what happened.
The Bears are now 5-1. What do you think about Nick Foles and especially that press conference yesterday? Because I got a little bit fired up watching it.
What press conference? I missed this.
About him going off on how good he is and what he thinks of the team and the offensive line and that they're going to be improved and they're going to be even better than their 5-1 record.
Oh, I didn't see that. I didn't even hear about that. That's interesting. Nick Foles was fired up.
Oh yeah.
BDN baby. BDN.
Wow. That's so interesting. I mean, I've known Nick for a while. He's never been anything but like really calm and, the exact opposite of fired up. I don't think I've ever seen him fired up. Now I'm going to have to look
surprised.
It up as soon as we're done talking. Listen, at this point, I'm giving in, okay? You know, there's no way they should have beat the Lions. DeAndre Swift drops a touchdown. They got all kinds of favorable calls against the Bucks in that Thursday night game. But their defense is really, really good. And Foles has been able to do just enough on offense. They're 5-1. And I believe ultimately in the NFL, you are what you're supposed to be and you are what you've earned. And it doesn't matter about shoulda, woulda, coulda. They're 5-1. They've got good special teams, good defense, good enough offense. Tip of the cap to the Bears.
Well, and I mean, it's almost like we forget Khalil Mack plays for the Bears now. Sometimes you can go there and get lost in the shuffle. I think the proof for Chicago, Ross, will be next Monday night. They go to SoFi in Los Angeles. They play the Rams. And the Rams will be looking for a bounce back. So that'll be a good litmus test for the Bears on the road against a team looking to avenge a division loss the week before in a game that they feel, I'm sure, like they should have won.
Yeah, but I mean, I agree. But even so, I mean, they just went on the road and beat a 3-2 Panthers team. I mean, they deserve a lot of credit for that. And, you know, the Panthers made it closer at the end, but that was a pretty solid victory for the Bears over, you know, their last two wins were over teams that had winning records when they beat them. I mean, at this point, you really just have to say, hey, kudos to them. I mean, it's they're like the only team that's winning that way, right? Everybody else is winning with they got really good offense and blah, blah, blah. The Bears are like the only team that's kind of winning old school with these close, low-scoring games. But I like it. I like that there's some variety. It's not just like the five best teams or the five teams of the MVP candidate quarterbacks, you know?
Yeah. Tua finally gotten some action. They saw him after the game. Ross, I'm not sure if you saw the photo of him sitting on the 15-yard line. What's that? Can you take us back to your first game and what that was like and the emotions?
Yeah. So I tweeted about this and I replied to Adam Schefter on Instagram at Ross Tucker NFL that, you know, just thinking about that and just looking at that picture kind of gets me a little bit choked up. You know, he did it. He made it. He played an NFL game. And I think we lose sight of that because he was the fifth pick in the draft and, you know, the money and everything. But, you know, where he grew up in Hawaii and then all the injuries at Alabama, including the really bad one last year, to actually sit on that field, he got in an NFL game, he played, and it's like, he made it. His lifelong dream came true. I still remember the first game I suited up for Washington at Philadelphia, of all places, which was cool, but I didn't actually get in the game. And the thing that stands out to me the most, guys, A, when I found out I made the team. I mean, that I had to drive back to Pennsylvania to get some the rest of my clothes. It was training camp. All I had was like one bag. The calls I made on the drive home to my parents, to my high school coach, my college coach, my girlfriend at the time, who's my wife now. I mean, that I'll never forget that drive my whole life. And then my second year, I was playing for the Cowboys, and I was starting at the RCA Dome against the Colts. And, you know, that's, you know, I'm in the tunnel or whatever, and they say, starting at left guard in his second year out of Princeton, number 69, Ross Tucker. When I ran onto that field, I was so overcome with emotion, you know, because it was like, I'm from Wyomissing, Pennsylvania. You know, like I was representing everyone from my hometown and my lifelong dream. Like I was starting an NFL game. It's not many people get to have their dreams in life come true. And it's a real blessing.
Cool moment. Ross, thanks for this. Have a safe drive to Buffalo, and we'll see how this one plays out. Looking forward to it because I think they're just clear differing opinions on whether the Bills can step up and get it done against a Kansas City team, and we'll break it all down next week.
Yeah, I can't wait. Monday afternoon football. See you, dudes.
You bet. Ross Tucker of the Ross Tucker Football Podcast, the Fantasy Feast Podcast, the Even Money Podcast, and the College Draft Podcast.
How many podcasts is he doing a day?
I don't
probably
know.
Probably not a daily.
Well,
thing.
The Ross Tucker Football Podcast is definitely daily. It's 30 minutes every day. But
it's 30 minutes. I mean,
it's
not 3 hours.
Waits until he hangs up. Waits until he hangs up.
Are you kidding me?
I like it. I like it. Just stick that knife in when he's not here to defend himself. A big birthday in Blue Jays land today. And John Paul Morosi on the coming World Series next. All right, I get it. I get it. Will Smith hit a home run off Will Smith. That was great. That was awesome.
Is that not the first time two guys with the same name pitched and hit off each other? It must have been.
And you know what I did, Ziggy, right in that moment? I went to Twitter and I said, how long is it going to take me to see a tweet that says, well, you just knew Will Smith was going to win that battle. And sure enough.
Who was it? Do you remember who it was?
I don't know if it was Jeff Passan or if it was just somebody a little more random than I don't want to throw Jeff under the bus in case it wasn't him, but it was someone prominent. Well, you just knew Will Smith was going to win that battle. By the way, I want to wish a happy birthday 40 today to Jose Bautista. Jose Bautista is 40 years old.
I'm a man. I'm 40.
And so for the first time in 36 years, Jose's age starts with the number 4.
Mm-hmm.
Some others we know are getting awfully close to that that unremarkable truth as well. One of them is you, Ziggy, and another a little further off, John Paul Morosi of MLB Network.
Good morning, gentlemen. That was a very thoughtful introduction.
That's the worst introduction I've ever heard in my life.
It's very soon. Very soon you will be the only one on this show who is in his 30s, John, and you will be able to make all the...
That's what we should do for all the guests. Our next guest is going to be almost 40 soon.
Yeah. Our next guest is a 28-year-old who likes long walks on the beach. All right.
Yeah, well, the reality is, so I may have a little bit more time in my 30s, but I do not have a full head of hair, which really counteracts that. I cannot compete with either of you in that area. So that's, so there you go.
By the way, just because I didn't see a tweet, you didn't do one of those, well, I knew Will Smith was going to get the better of that matchup tweets, did you?
Or
are you guilty?
Here's what I said. I did not say that. Here's what I said. And I thought this was appropriate. It was pithy, and I thought it summarized the moment. My tweet was something along the lines of, I think this is exactly what I said. I think I said, same name, new game. Period. That's it. Same name, period. New game, period.
And that's absolutely what it turned into in that moment. What do you think Atlanta, because look, the Dodgers were the best team in the National League. I will say this, the teams with the two best records in their respective leagues are meeting in the World Series. Whatever I feel about the Tampa Bay Rays, the two best records are meeting in the World Series. So I think that is a good thing because it is best on best, mano a mano now. But Atlanta blew a 3-1 series lead. What will they regret the most? Because it felt like some little things, the quote, little things crept in. A couple of base running mistakes and things like that. Top of Cody Bellinger and some big swings from the Dodgers, and they're great players. Felt like some little things crept in and cost the Braves.
Well, I agree. And I would say, guys, that the way in which they lost is going to stick with them more than the fact that it was a 3-1 series lead. I'm going back to the base running mistakes in the last three games, especially that double play last night. That can't happen. Second and third, nobody out. Then you get a double play on a ball that I think there was some logic to there being a contact play on. Jerry Weinstein, the great longtime coach, made a very good point last night on Twitter that basically the way that Turner was playing off the line made the contact play a logical play there. But still, that can happen there. And I think that, so for me, there's no shame in losing to the Dodgers. There's no shame in going to the seventh game of an NLCS, but losing in a way that made you think, you know what, we really made some base running miscues that could have changed things, and I think that's going to stick with them because there's no question this team should be back at this stage again in the years to come. Of course, the great Canadian Mike Soroka will come back next year, and it's going to be a tremendous boost to them, and they should be back in an NLCS. But we also know this, that that is, if I've read one story, I've read a million of them that say, well, this team has arrived at this stage, and we know it's just the first time of many that we'll be seeing him back here. And it doesn't always work out that way, because baseball is a funny game, and sometimes those windows that we think are open forever, in fact, are not, because this game changes so much, and it can be very, very capricious in that way. So I think overall, yes, a lot to be proud of for them, but the fact that it was some mental mistakes and base running errors that really stung them in the end, I think, is going to be a very difficult way for them to start the offseason.
Do you think the Dodgers are the favorites in the World Series?
I do. I think that they, while they don't have the perfect classic four or five man rotation, this is not the 2011 Phillies, even though they didn't win either, but just to have that stud group of starting pitchers and have it be a straightforward way to manage things. They don't have quite that arrangement, but I still think that overall they've got the most depth, and we're about to see in a really unique way the Rays and then the deluxe version of the Rays play each other. And by deluxe, I mean it's the same methodology that Andrew Friedman brought to Los Angeles. Now they just have the budget to be able to sign a Mookie Betts and trade for him. That's really the difference here, and the difference here is that the Rays have certainly a tremendous collection of players, very smart moves. You think about someone like a Chris Taylor with the Dodgers, who's become so important to them. Chris Taylor is a Rays kind of move. That's the kind of move that Andrew made with the Rays, and you find someone that someone else is not fully valued, and all of a sudden he becomes a really incredibly important part of your club, or some of the pitching that they've developed. But there's no Mookie Betts on the Rays. That's the kind of player that you don't have if you're Tampa Bay. And we've seen the last 3 days just how great Mookie played. You know, he I'll tell you this real quick, because I was lucky enough here, but because of the quarantine, as we talked about last week, to actually be on the field before and after games now, which is really just to step on a field is pretty. It feels so great under my shoes now, just to feel that dirt is incredible. And after the game, it was different than a normal interview situation, because I'd done a couple interviews for MLB Network afterward, and then the players were starting to kind of mill about. Their families were there, and I saw Mookie, who I've known him, you know, pretty well over the years, just enough to talk to him, and he's always been great to me, and he's just such a classy person. And I saw Mookie, and I said, "Hey, Mookie, man, congratulations! That was so much fun to watch." And he just stopped and he smiled back to me. He said, "Man, that was so much fun to play." And he was right. It was a simple reaction. He was gone on his way to go find his family and join his teammates. But he had so much fun, and it's the joy that he plays with that I think is a key part of his success, and why I think he's just so magnetic for all of us to watch. He's so much fun to watch, and these plays, and he loves the game, loves his teammates, loves making these game-changing plays. It's just you can't take your eyes off him on the field, and that was just a fun little anecdote I wanted to share. But just you could just tell he had fun playing, and I think he has given the Dodgers that light and joy. And when I think there's been a lot of heaviness for them trying to win this World Series, and when you could just watch him play, it just makes you smile, whether you're on his team or we're just watching like we are. And he's just so great for baseball.
With John Paul Morosi. So I'm going to take this in a different direction, because I will never in my life, John, pass up an opportunity to crap on Boston.
Okay.
They mishandled John Lester in 2014 and arrogantly and petulantly tried to lowball him, and he said, screw it. And they ended up trading him to Oakland at the deadline for some kids. He signed with the Cubs and proceeded to have a number of more great years and brought the Cubs out of the World Series abyss. How did the Boston Red Sox, you know, we talk about drafting and developing your own people, and that Tampa Bay is a team that has to move on from those guys when they get expensive in arbitration because they just don't have the cash. Boston doesn't have that excuse. How do you draft and develop a player the quality of Mookie Betts and then let him go? Is it simply they misspent in other areas, like Chris Sale with the injuries and all that? They gave too much money to too many other guys. How do you let, of all people in that equation, that Red Sox equation, Mookie Betts move on?
Well, I think it's a couple things. And Scott, I think it's a very good point about the money they spent elsewhere. And if you add it up, the amount of money they spent on Chris Sale and the amount they spent on Nathan Eovaldi this year.
And none of those guys are lifelong Red Sox. Neither is J.D. Martinez.
Exactly. I think that the Red Sox, and remember, by the time really the extension years rolled around for Mookie, it wasn't the GM that had drafted him. Of course, he had the relationship with Ben Cherington, who was the player development director, and he had been the GM. And then, of course, he was let go, and they brought in Dave Dombrowski. And Dave, he obviously won a World Series there at the Dodgers' expense, which is so ironic. But he wasn't necessarily he obviously was not the GM that drafted him, and so there was not that connection. And whether it was at the Dombrowski level or the John Henry level and Tom Warner and the ownership group, but they did not strategically plan either in what they told Mookie, what they offered him, or how they made moves around it. They did not make it clear that he was their number one priority by signing Sale and Eovaldi. I go back to those two, and certainly Bogaerts to an extent too. And Bogaerts, I think that contract, while huge, I see the logic in it because he's a shortstop and he's a key guy, also a homegrown guy, to your point. But and the Red Sox did make Mookie a pretty significant offer a couple of years ago. But whatever the reason, it was not the way it was framed, the way that he was. Maybe he felt as though he could have been treated better along the way, or maybe he wanted just to explore different options. But remember, he was saying consistently, and clearly it was not necessarily the case, because he said all the time, I want to see what free agency is like. I want to take this to free agency. Was it because he really wanted free agency, or was it because he just wanted to explore a place that was not Boston? We'll probably never know. But he goes to L.A. and without free agency signs this massive deal. And so I think it was maybe the city, maybe the environment, maybe the manager, of course, Dave Roberts being so great. There's a lot of reasons why I think he was comfortable doing it. But the Red Sox, I think it's clear to me, could have played their hand differently, because as we now know, Mookie Betts' initial statements against becoming, against avoiding free agency, if you will, clearly were not hard and fast, because he signed a pretty significant extension with the Dodgers, and they're very glad that he did.
We'll leave it there. Thanks for this, pal, and I'll try to come up with a better intro for you next time. I don't want Ziggy to laugh me out of the building.
That was a great intro. It put a smile on my face. You know, that show was was a big part of our youth, and we're all about the same age. That was a great show. Loved it. The Fresh Prince. And I love, by the way, how Will Smith of the Dodgers kind of leaned into that. Yeah. You know, it'd be easy to sort of not be comfortable being called the Fresh Prince all the time, but he loves it. So it's pretty cool.
We'll talk next week. Always good to hear your voice.
Sounds great, guys. All the best. Thanks.
John Paul Morosi of the MLB Network. All right, we'll get Hugh into studio. Hugh and I think the Bills are going to beat Kansas City tonight. You and Silent Vic Ziggy think Kansas City is going to win. We have to come up with the terms of the bet, the gentleman's bet we're going to make on this afternoon's game. We'll do that next. All right, the first of 5 days' worth of videos from our trip to the batting cage will be out on social media shortly. We'll repost them and retweet them and all that. I don't know what the first day brings.
We're stretching this thing out over 5 days, like the Ten Commandments.
Yes, the Five Commandments. The Five Commandments of the batting cage. Yeah. Did Ziggy hit 90 miles an hour? Well, we revealed last Friday that he did, but we'll take you through the build-up to that. So we have Kansas City and Buffalo playing at 5 o'clock this afternoon, and an early afternoon or early evening Monday nighter.
Yes, please.
You and I, Hugh, think Buffalo's going to win.
Yep.
Ziggy and Silent Vic think Kansas City is going to win. We're putting a bet down. You and I have agreed that if Kansas City beats Buffalo, we will drink sheep kefir.
Whatever that is. Well, that's a disgusting concoction that Ziggy was choking back.
Right, that gross, yeah. Weird. And we're now getting tweets from people who see it on the supermarket shelves, yeah. And they tweet Ziggy and me and say, hey, look, there's racks of it.
Love it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm sure there's plenty of it at your local grocery store.
All right, so Ziggy and Silent Vic, who...
Well, I'm going to throw this out there. I know Silent Vic is like me. We like to have the beard, right? Like, I don't remember the last time I shaved. Like, I think it's probably been over a year since I've actually shaved. Not beard trim, like shaved. So we can ask Silent Vic if he'll do this, if it's good for him as well. I say both of us have to shave for the week, which I haven't done. Okay, Oof. Good. He's on board. That's okay. A lot, though. I'm not happy about this.
Yeah,
I don't like shaving. I like keeping a little bit of scruff.
We're getting off
the beard
easy,
rocking
Scotty.
Right now.
Like, all we have to do is just drink some of this whatever it is.
Yeah,
these guys are changing
guys,
their entire
you guys are,
look.
You guys are going to be drinking it every day. I already know right now.
Oh, you're we have to drink it every day?
No, I'm just
going to say you're going to drink it once, and you're going to want it more than once.
You're going to fall in love with it. Okay.
He thinks a concoction that tastes like a combination of sour milk and cat crap is
going to... There's 1 million probiotics in it.
That's excellent.
Don't ever forget that. That's what you need.
Yeah. Yeah.
Is that good or bad? I don't know.
Whatever that is.
Is 1 million of the 1 million probiotics a better aftertaste than I'm anticipating?
Go Bills.
Go Bills. Yes. Yes. We will be choke slamming something through a table before that game. We are Bills Mafia all the way. We'll see who wins this bet. We're back tomorrow at 6 o'clock. Good show coming up. Enjoy a rainy Monday.
I actually talked to Joe Montana.